are listening to Off Planet Radio at offplanetradio.com.
Earlier today, I got a heads up about an Israeli bombing of the Damascus airport. This is not being reported in the U.S. right now. It is being reported largely out of the Middle East via an Israeli website and guardian.co.uk. But there are very interesting things going on in the background right now pertaining to the Middle East, and while we have troops there, and the Zionist state is not interested in peace. They're interested in expanding their boundaries and their territories, and the bombing of Damascus has prophetic overtones as well. The book of Isaiah in the Old Testament of the Hebrew Scriptures indicates that at some point Damascus will be a smoking heap of rubble. Damascus is the longest occupied city in the world. So it's worth watching. That's kind of on the dark side of things. You're noticing we're an hour late tonight from our normal time. That's because of time zone shifts that are going on across the planet. Europe and the United States do not synchronize, so we are 1 hour later than normal, and I don't know, we'll see what the normal is anymore, but we are 9:30 p.m. East Coast time, 6:30 p.m. West Coast time. There's a time clock calculator computer on the website at offplanetmedia.net where we are streaming live right now. And so if you're confused about that, so are we. It's a difficult thing. The folks at Conscious Consumer Network are in the Netherlands, and they predicate the time zones for the network out of the UK through GMT, Greenwich Mean Time, which switches in the summer to BST. I don't know why. It's GMT. It's the Meridian. But so there's a lot that goes into planning a network, and sometimes things shift around. We're good with it because we're never on time for anything. As you'll notice, this show was late tonight. I have with me tonight two guests on telephone, and I'll bring them up in a few minutes. A couple of things that I wanted to point out are going on with, well, in the general milieu of the internet right now, there is this... there's always cults, and part of what's happening right now is we're beginning to see a lot of different cults come into play. I posted a blog article onto offplanetradio.com yesterday. I've been having these conversations in the background with my friends, folks over at Cosmic Voice, Thomas Williams and Drake, as well as Kara St. Louis, and I've been talking about this Savior program, which is running as a meme in the background now. This has always been with us, by the way. This is part of humanity's broken state, our split consciousness. We are looking for salvation outside of ourselves. And that may sound blasphemous to the religious, but the Bible actually tells you, and Jesus said, that the truth is inside you, and that's where you go to look for things. The article refers largely to two people. Mr. Keshe, who is the nuclear physicist out of Iran, who has declared himself a messiah and is unveiling technology that he claims is anti-grav and free energy devices, which he's now handed out to ambassadors from third world nations on the predication that they will agree to global peace. Well, the people who really run the planet are not interested in global peace, and they sure as hell are not interested in free energy. So there's some kind of false ploy going on here. The other side of it is Simon Parks, who I've talked about before. I've had contact with Simon, and I've watched what he's been doing. He is part of this Savior programming as well. He is making rather radical claims without any substantiation, and he's beginning to exhibit signs of slippage in his personality. So is this a personal attack on these people? It is not. I'm certain that they are all well-intended, but they are also running a background program right now that indicates that they will go into a cult mode at some point. So the reason for putting the article out isn't to attack Mr. Keshe or Simon Parks or Stephen Greer or any other people I've talked to. It is for you to be aware of the danger of allowing other people to lead you in places you do not want to go. So we are in this shift right now. We're going to talk about law tonight. We're going to talk about some current events, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Flat Earth. And this is a subject that I've been noticeably absent on. I've tried to get some people to come on. I've not found most of the Flat Earth people on YouTube to be either credible personally or credible factually. And it's been a real card shuffle in trying to find somebody to speak to this. So rather than going with trying to find somebody who may be a, quote, expert, there are no experts on this, by the way, we're going to talk about it loosely in this conversation tonight with Stephen Miller, and our friend Dennis is also on the line from Yakima, Washington, and we're just going to kind of football this around and see what we come up with. This show has always been No Limits, No Boundaries. Whenever I have posted about Flat Earth on Facebook and other places, I get slapped down hard because there is a consensus out there that we simply, well, these are the lines we don't cross. Well, there are no lines I don't cross. You draw a line, I'm freaking crossing it. And the Flat Earth subject is just interesting enough and controversial enough that it needs to be addressed from a perspective that I don't think most people address it. As I said earlier, there are no wrong concepts. We play with these concepts. They pertain to our consciousness. So exploring an idea you don't agree with or an idea that you don't completely comprehend is actually a healthy thing to do. Is it crazy? Maybe it is. Maybe the idea that we live on a ball earth is equally crazy. Let me bring my guests on tonight. First off, scheduled guest for tonight, Stephen John Miller is on the line. He is a jurist. He is a practitioner in common law applications in everyday life. And I've personally followed his advice. I've used his work, and we've had many conversations over the time that we've known each other about the application of law in daily life. And with us also on the line tonight is my friend Dennis Simmons. He is with us also from Yakima, Washington. Stephen, good evening.
Hey, how are you?
Good evening. Stephen John Miller. And Dennis.
Good evening, everybody.
Good to have you guys on tonight. You kind of heard me lay out the gridwork for where we're going to go on the show tonight. And I know that on all of these subjects, both of you are, you're very versed in the things that I'm talking about. And we're just going to have a very fluid conversation on it. Stephen, you and I have had, I think, two or three shows together, mostly talking about law. And by the way, let me say this, because it's Veterans Day as well. It's 11/11. Did I mention it's 11? It's 11/11. It's 11/11.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And it is Veterans Day.
Oh, okay.
And so we want to say our thanks to those who have served, those who have given, and we hope that in future Veterans Days ahead, we will not be looking at adding to the ranks of people who have had to serve in wars in this horrendous global war-driven economy. So it is 11/11, and Stephen Miller is a veteran as well. And Steve, maybe talk a little bit, give people your background. This is kind of a fluid audience. Let people know a little bit about you and your background and how you got to where we are today.
Just noticing the corruption in the system since I was a little kid. I mean, I was, you know, I was very hard to fool, if you will. You know, I could see things going on that were just wrong, and it bothered me at a very young age. And, you know, I was inquisitive, so I read as many books as I could, and including stuff I probably wasn't supposed to read, being in America, you know, part of the church, and you're not supposed to read too many other books, you know. But, so anyway, I became privy of the corruption and all the different, hidden occult powers that rule this planet. So, that's pretty much, my life story is studying this stuff as a little kid. I don't have a big grandiose story of any battle stories or anything like that. I served in the military during peacetime. So, that's really not too much about me. My music, you can check out music if you like music. I like to sing and play guitar. But I guess I'm just kind of a normal person that does a lot of different stuff. But, the corruption in my country, it bothered me when I seen this going on. And so I started trying to change it. You know, years gone by, I've been trying just to wake as many people up as I can, as one person, you know, that's all.
Now, you've studied law for over 20 years, and I've seen your work, and I've seen your work actually function, and you clearly are self-educated in law. So give us a little bit of how you came to delve into what we call common law, which is probably the easiest way to grasp the type of law work that you do. And I'll make the distinction here for listeners between law and legal. I actually learned something. This is interesting.
Okay.
I was reading a document over the time that I was away. Document, I think, was written by Anna von Wright. And in the document, which is basically an injunction against the American Bar Association, the International Bar Association, the definition was given there of legal, and the term legal is defined by an 1858 British encyclopedia as the process of breaking the law of God. That's legal. That's your legal profession right there. Isn't that interesting?
That goes hand in hand with licensing, right?
Right,
licensing,
exactly.
Like, if you get married, you're paying a sin tax.
Right.
That's what the license is. Yeah. Yeah. Same thing, right? So, yeah, the common law is the unwritten, law of reason, an unspoken law of reasons, okay? And then we went over this last time, Randy, and the statutes were created to bring out the defect, is the word we were looking for. Last time I was parked on the side of that mountain at a gas station, I couldn't think of it in my car, but yeah, to bring out the defect in the common law, which to me is backwards as usual. Let's take something simple and make it more complicated than claim we're removing defects. It's just absurd on the face of it, because this is their excuse for the statute. And but the statutes, I mean, they're clearly written for corporate interest, business,
mm-hmm.
Money, commerce, interstate commerce between two states. It's obvious what they're written for if you really sit down and read some of them, and you can find your remedies, I think, the annotated statutes. So you can get that book in any state you're in. And then you've got their little book of tricks, because, I don't know anybody that has that book or knows about it except for maybe me and a couple other people. I would always get the annotated statutes book, and guess what? It has your remedy in there. So you can use it against them. Because in the annotated statutes, it shows all the time, all the different times that statute was ruled against, as far as like the one they're using against you. So there's your defense. So anyway, little secrets, and annotated statutes. Yep. So I'm watching changes, Randy, but and it's frightening in one way because the people who have been doing, you know, the wrong thing in our country for a long time, it's like it's all being found out. I don't know if anybody else has noticed that, but like just suddenly it's like everybody's lurching towards Hillary Clinton and the Bush crime family, and it's like it's exploding. You know, people want justice. I mean, you know, think about it. Who's been in charge since our country's taken a nosedive? Well, it's been the Bush crime family that operate through the Clintons so they can stay in power, and same with Barack Obama. Okay, just one big crime syndicate from Bush all the way to Obama, same people. And people are starting to try and finally figure this out. You know.
Well, we don't really have a government. We haven't had a government since right before the Civil War, when the southern states walked out and Congress became vacated, basically, revived by Lincoln as a rump Congress to operate the war that he declared for the insurrection. And then, of course, from there we go to the Civil War period. We go to Reconstruction era. We go into the era of the 14th Amendment and the incorporation of the United States under the D.C. Organic Act. So effectively, we've not had the organic government or the organic constitution since, what,
1862? If you look at it like this, though, most people read the 14th Amendment and they don't read it correctly. But if you read it, I think it's section 2 and section 3 of the 14th Amendment, or clause 3, section 2. I'll look it up yourself. Okay, I'm doing this off the top of my head, but it clearly says that it's clearly for public figures, authorities, and stuff. It's not, that was never directed at the people. It says it in there. It's for elected officials, I think, is what it really coined it. But anyway, so how it got pushed off on saying, well, we freed the black folks and, you know, and they made everybody a citizen. In other words, enslaved everybody. But all this stuff, still the reason this is unlawful, no matter what anybody wants to argue, is because it's done, sneakily, They're not telling anybody this stuff. They're not saying, okay, you're going to give up your natural rights, in lieu of, some benefits and privileges. I mean, they never told me that. I don't know anybody they told that to.
Right. The whole thing is, it goes into contracts and consensual law. And, whether we have consented explicitly or not. This is where it gets very interesting because effectively there's all kinds of what are called adhesions whereby it is, again, here's another key word, there is a presumption to clauses built into the various statutes, codes, and contract corporate law that is used to enforce these laws. So
right.
talk a little bit about that, about how we navigate around this implied contract that we have. Some politician, probably several of them, have called it a social contract. That's bullshit. I don't buy that. Unless my name's signed on it and a proper signature as a living being, I haven't agreed to anything.
Right. Yeah. And that's what they do. It's not, they don't want to admit it, that they're using bribery and extortion and kidnapping to carry out everyday business. And there you go. That's what they do. As far as rewind me back to that point, you said you were asking me a key point there.
Okay. Well, I know that you wanted to tonight kind of go over some of things that we talked about in previous shows, because I'm kind of walking you towards some of the points of law that you want to cover and clarify. Back a few months ago, we did a show, and we covered a lot of material, as we usually do in that show. And I know you have some things that you want to bring up to discuss about application of law tonight. So tell me where you want to go with this.
Well, I read a lot of law, and I listen to lectures, okay? Just anybody wonders how I learn, that's how I do it. Lectures and a lot of reading and, you know, whatever words I don't understand, I look up definition and pronunciation, you know, how they're pronounced. And you can hear the MP3 on how these words are pronounced. And that doesn't mean I get them all right all the time, but I'm saying, that's what it's taken me, and because I wanted to figure this out. It's when you see innocent people being just blatantly deprived of their rights and their money stolen and threatened, and you know, that's time. It was time for me to try to be part of the solution and getting to the bottom of you know, what exactly the problem is. And the problem, you know, when I realized how deep it goes. You know, back, you know, let's just go back to the Libra Code. And, you know, Libra under President Lincoln wrote the law of war and said, okay, well, this is the law. And Americans, for the most part, never even heard of the Libra Code. You know, that's what the police are under, the military are supposed to be under it. But the Libra Code says the American Army, it doesn't say the United States. So I always had a conflict there when I studied the Libra Code. But and it never mentions anything corporate United States. So,
well, for the listeners out there, that is the Lieber Code, LIEBER. You can just go look that up on the internet because it's out there. And it is a document that defines basically how the military was to interact with the civilian population in the United States during the Civil War. The question becomes, why the hell do we still have the Lieber Code when peace was declared?
Right. Supposedly, right.
Well, we have Abraham Lincoln on record as declaring peace. We have Andrew Johnson who declared peace twice. And yet, the rump Congress that enacted the 14th Amendment has continued to act under articles of war with the American people as citizen combatants.
Yeah, basically as their cattle.
Yeah.
They're taking our hard-earned labor and converting it into their secret agendas, you know? It's disgusting, and it's got to stop. But all these horrible wars and these innocent people playing all over the world, it's disgusting. They're doing it in our name. You know, and I tell people, and we got a lot of ammunition now, okay? Only you have to go to these you know, inferior Article 1 courts where the, you know, Congress said, well, we can create inferior tribunals, okay? That's where this stuff came from. Well, so why is there bar members in the courtrooms? Because, well, why not? They're all inferior tribunals, or else they can't have their little association running everything. But if you bring them into Article 3, you know, common law, you know,
and now back up a minute. Don't assume that everybody knows what Article 3 is. Let's tell people what that is.
Yeah, Article 3, Section 2, Clause 3, if you read it, it tells you, you know, an impartial jury shall hear all criminal cases, okay? It's not a right, okay? It's the law. The law is a jury shall hear all of these cases, and the judge isn't even supposed to be in the courtroom. Okay, so let's say, so if you're in Article 1 inferior court, that's why there's going to be a judge in there. That's how you know. If you're in Article 3 common law court of record, there's going to be a jury. It's not that very mad, they'll be calling one up real quick for you. Trust me. So that's how you tell the difference. These are inferior courts because they're practicing administrative policy on the people, and that's why they have to deceive everybody in their little game. I'm saying, do you understand the charge? Do you live at this address? That's how they get territorial jurisdiction. you know, is your name, and that's the personal jurisdiction. And the subject matter is when they ask you, do you understand the charge? Because they really like to have all three. Or, you know, move forward against whatever they try to see is a problem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the jurisdictions, and people don't have to complicate it all that much. I mean, like this thing we're working on with Dennis, you know, it's just corrupt. It's so corrupt. You know, it's just, there's no damaged party anywhere saying, well, I was harmed, and here's what happened, you know. So, you know, there's no case there.
Now you just referred to something that the audience does not know about. So, do we want to talk about this? Do we want to talk about Dennis's particular circumstances and that situation?
Well, I can't talk about those right now until this thing is over.
Okay. Well, then we don't want to
talk about. Yeah, I can talk about similar ones and stuff.
Okay. Well, let's do this. Let's do a hypothetical here. The common average everyday garden variety traffic stop in the United States. Doesn't matter. You know, 50 miles over the speed limit, driving, you know, over the lines, whatever. You get pulled over. You are asked for driver's license, insurance card, and registration. Papers, please. At the side of the road, and the police officer suspends travel. So let's play with that scenario a little bit, Stephen.
Okay. I get beat up for this because I'm not a typical person you'll hear on different other shows. I carry all that stuff with me because I don't really have a problem with it. I roll my window down, turn my lights on, and all that stuff, you know. And I'm very courteous. And then I go into, you know, my knowledge of law. And I don't let them interrupt me either. I invoke the First Amendment. I thought, wait a minute, let me finish what I got to say. You know, the First Amendment protects that right. And then you can say whatever you want. You know, that's what I do. You know, and so I wasn't disrespectful. I got my paperwork, whatever. And I was going to hear what I got to say. Okay. That's how I do it. A little give and take. You know, it's a human being out there in the weather. You know, for whatever reason they stopped you. And that's usually it. I usually don't get, I haven't had a ticket in a long time. And what I do have, I got throat reduced to civil infraction, so.
Okay. But I'm asking you to speak to general principles here. In other words, the point of this is to kind of do a mini seminar tonight on recourse that people have when they encounter law enforcement. So I'm kind of trying to pin you down a little bit here in terms of some remedies.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, I mean, I tell people what I personally do, it's not advice, okay? You do whatever you want. You know, I mean, I'm just telling you what I've, you know, what I've tried and stuff.
Do you all mind if I speak a little bit to this?
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, this is Dennis. I've been driving truck for over 30 years, and I've been dealing with law enforcement that whole time. And I've watched them build this system, and it is a system, people. It is a big, complicated, well-funded tracking of all movement of everybody. They do it today with trucks. I drive a semi. They track us every moment of every day when we cross state borders, when we cross scales, when we cross state lines, when we check in, we get fuel, when we anything we do, they can track. They can shut all the trucks down and flick of a switch. And the thing is that people don't understand is they can do that with everybody. The whole system is built. The scales are in, the computer systems, the people, the infrastructure, it's all there up and running, and they could flick a switch tomorrow and make everybody in the country have to go through these places. So people say that we live in a free country, and I say bullshit. I've been out there for over 30 years, and I've watched them build this system. And it's worse than communism. I've had an incident where I got pulled in and got my paperwork checked at a scale. And the guy, you know, it takes a long time to list all the different documentation I have to have. And if any of my paperwork isn't in order, they can shut me down. And the guy could tell that I was irritated that he was doing this paperwork inspection. He says, "You got a problem?" I says, "Yeah, but I'll tell you about it when we're done." And so we got all done, and he hands me my paperwork. And I looked at him in the eye just as he was handing me the paperwork. I said, "Yes, comrade, my papers are in order." And he says, "Oh, well, I fought in Vietnam. I fought them guys. It isn't that bad." And I said, "No, no, no, you're wrong. It is that bad. Because if any one of these pieces of paper wasn't to your liking, I would be in trouble. I could be hauled off to jail. This truck could be confiscated. And that's not right. That's not the America I was told I was growing up in." And it's gotten to the point where you go into court now and it is as corrupt as the day is long. And I'm in the middle of it. I sat in a courtroom not long ago for 3 hours. And in 3 hours, they shuffled somewhere between 50 and 55 people through. I mean, quick. And I kept a running tally in my head how much he was fining these people. Now, granted, the most of these people were using a public defender. And it came out in one of the cases what the minimum requirement to qualify for a public defender was. And it was $1,200 a month. So if you make $1,200 a month or less, you qualify for a public defender. I don't know where you guys live, but to me, that's poverty. You make $1,200 a month, you're living under the poverty level. So these were the poorest people in the community. And they shoved 55 people through. Over $6,000 were collected in 3 hours. $6,000 in 3 hours. These courts are not law. These are banks. These are for-profit corporations. They're there to make money. It has nothing to do with safety of the public or anything else. It's just like most of the laws I'm dealing with in the trucking industry now. Safety's gone out the window a long time ago. It's all about revenue. It's all about making money. I mean, I can make a quarter-inch wrong line on my logbook, quarter of an inch. I messed up and made a little quarter-inch error in my logbook. It cost me $1,300 in the state of California. For that little quarter inch. What's that have to do with safety? What does 15 minutes of anything have to do with safety? Nothing. It's all about money. And so I, growing up, was always that kid that never fit in with any of the cliques. But when I saw the bully picking on one of the little guys or one of the weird ones or whatever, I would jump in the middle and look that bully in the eye and say, "Now, you want to mess with somebody? Mess somebody, they'll fight back." And I got my ass kicked quite a bit. But I made my point, and I protected the little guy. And to me, that's what's going on now. Some of us have to stand up to this bully called the American court system and say, "Hell no. I draw a line in the sand. I ain't going to take your crap no more. You're a corporation. You're a dead entity. I'm a living being. I operate in common law. If you can show somebody, can produce somebody that I did harm to, I'll get my checkbook out and I'll make it right with them. Other than that, leave me the hell alone." And that's the American way. I had an incident at one of the places where we get our trucks repaired, and a whole bunch of trucks had pulled in and just packed the yard to where it was like a Rubik's Cube. Nobody could move. So I had a little bit of room, so I kind of stuffed my trailer into a hole. Another guy moved, whatever. And so we got all untangled. But in the process of me pulling out, I just scraped up against, with the back end of my trailer, up against the owner's pickup. And he said, "Oh, no problem, no problem." But a week later, I went in and took my truck in, and I could tell something was bothering him. So I asked him, I said, "Something going on?" "Well, yeah, kind of." He said, "The other day when you hit my truck?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "That kind of bothers me." I said, "Well, what would it take to make it right?" He goes, "Well, I don't know." I said, $500? Would that make it right?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Now, if I give you $500, you'll feel no harm, right?" He says, "That's right." So I handed him $500. See, that's the way you take care. We don't need a third party man sitting on some bench thinking he's holier than thou, sitting up there passing judgment. You know, if we all just have a half a heart for each other, then we can work together. We can work this stuff out. It doesn't have to go into a courtroom.
So. You know, you look at this situation like this, and I don't know what is cause and effect, but I suspect that as we moved into this, it's basically a quasi-capitalist socialist system, if you look at the way it operates. But as we had more and more laws, as we went into limited liability corporations, limited indemnity in terms of insurance, as government became protectionist, and this is true not just in the United States, but around the entire planet, personal responsibility began to melt away and people became callous and brutish and rude. And now we're to the point where everything is litigation, where people just simply go off and they prosecute you. The police do this on a routine basis in terms of assuming that you are a perp, that you are a criminal. And in fact, if you read the 14th Amendment carefully, you'll find out that you are a criminal. So we have this moral dilemma as a result of the heavy-handedness of law, where law is actually fairly simple. Do no harm to any person or their property.
Right.
Right. Yep.
Stephen, you want to...
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. You want to kick something into the conversation here?
Yeah, so, that's the best remedy when dealing with police. First of all, be courteous so you don't live through it. So you don't know what kind of position these people are in mentally, or if they're jeopardized on steroids or whatever. And be very careful. And deal with it in court, And maybe I write the police officer a letter and state all the same stuff in there, as to how many rights were violated, what he did wrong, that you might want to put into a motion to dismiss, or something like that. I would put in, I would use demands myself, because I don't like parliamentary documents. Whenever you get into their language, it's called their type of document. That's parliamentary document. So you're automatically submitting to the Queen or whatever, actually the Queen nowadays.
Well, how many people know that the bar in the United States practices private copyrighted law via statutes? I mean, how many people know that?
Yeah, well, a lot about it. Why don't you fill in that little blank that you brought it up?
Okay, well, basically, again, if you just look at statutes and codes, which is about 80% of what we're dealing with, very little law practice actually falls under the purview of what you would call constitutional law, or even, the law of right and wrong. And basically, we're dealing with laws that deal in commerce. Therefore, since 1940s, but certainly since the 1960s when they realigned the courts, we have been in a state of commerce in this country under UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code. So at any given time, the UCC varies from state to state, but the laws themselves are actually copyrighted private law. They are not the common law of the people. They are the law of the Bar Association under the Crown in England, under the International Bar Association and the American Bar Association and their constituent organizations and members. So when we go into court, what you're talking about, if I understand correctly, is when you say parliamentary documents, we're talking basically about using the form and substance of their private laws. Is that correct?
Right. Like when you file a motion, that you're just writing a letter to the court requesting something to be done, right?
Yes.
That's a parliamentary document.
Yeah.
Right. So instead of putting in a request, put in a requirement, which is just another legal word for demand.
A mandamus. Call it a mandamus.
Yeah. Yeah, I just use regular language.
Okay.
A demand. I'm just saying, what I do. I know everybody has a different way nowadays, but like writ of mandamus, and I think that's how you say it, mandamus or whatever. But that's what I put in to like the next higher court to make the smaller court, obey the law. File a mandamus to their boss, basically, telling, hey, you got to make these guys obey the law. Here's what they're doing wrong, you know. And, so this little stuff, you know, you can look up.
Dennis. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you. Dennis, you want to, I know you were kind of in a, I'm trying to kind of move around the table here, but I didn't want to interrupt your flow because I know you had some things you wanted to say.
Well, you know, Stephen has got this stuff nailed. I mean, and when he talks about it, he's got so much knowledge in that head that I can see at times he struggles to put out the simple version because none of this is real simple. But that's the only way I understand stuff. If it ain't simple, I ain't going to get it. So what it boils down to is when you walk into a courtroom, they're operating in a realm that they do, if you walk in and declare yourself a man, I'm a living being. I'm not a corporation. I'm not a citizen, because in a court of law, a citizen is a slave, people. If you say I'm a citizen of the United States, you're saying I'm a slave of the United States, which is a corporation. So you're a corporate slave. Okay. If you're a person in a court, you're a corporation. Well, I'm not either. I'm a man. I'm the man, Dennis Simmons, or Dennis Wayne of the House of Simmons. So I'm declaring to the court that I'm here in common law, because all your other laws are for corporations and for slaves and for the people that administer the systems, like the judge sitting on the bench. Those laws are for him. He's supposed to protect me to make sure I am treated fairly. So when I walk into a courtroom and he's the bully, which was what I've come up against here recently, what do I do with bullies? What's my background with bullies? See, I don't back down. So I get in the guy's face and I say, hold it a minute. I said, who are you? He said, what do you mean? I'm judge such and such. Well, you might call yourself a judge, but what court am I in? What laws are you administering here? Because I put motions before you and you say they're no good. They're your own laws. So what laws are you operating in? Is this admiralty law? Is this statutory law? Or is this common law? Because they all have different languages. They all have different meanings of words. They all have different rules. And so he's wanting me to plead. And I said, I can't plea. I don't even know who the heck you are or what rules you're operating under. So until you inform me of who you are, you're not getting anything from me. I'm a living being. I'm not a corporation. Show me the contract I have with you, or show me where I did somebody harm. If you can't show either one, then I have no business being here. You have no authority over me. Now, the average person goes into courts and just says, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Okay, well, that's fine. If you want to submit to that, you go ahead. I'm sorry, but I'm a free man. I submit to nobody. Now, I'm going to walk into your courtroom. You're going to say you're superior over me. You better be ready to prove it. Well, these people aren't. You challenge them, and they get red in the face, and they get angry, and the blood vessels on their head start popping out, you know? And you hold them to their oath of office. That's what I did, and boy, that got him mad. Because he started to plead for me. And I'm going, hold in a minute. The only person in this courtroom that has the authority to plead for me is me. And am I still on?
You are, yes.
Yeah, okay. So
I'll just say amen every once in a while.
So once I called him on that and told him, you just, if you plead for me, then you are litigating from the bench. And that means you just stepped out of your oath of office and you just exposed your bond. Because their bond, a public servant has to have a bond. That's their insurance policy. That's to protect me. If they do me harm, I have to have recourse, and that's their bond. Okay? And their bond is protected as long as they're operating within their oath of office. As soon as they step outside of their oath of office, now their bond is exposed. Now they're the criminal. Now they're breaking their own damn laws. But you have to declare yourself. You have to walk into that courtroom and establish common law. You accept them for who they are, and you accept their oath of office, and you declare who you are. You just created common law within that court. Don't matter what the flag is. Don't matter what the judge wants. Don't matter anything. You just established common law because you're the only living being in that courtroom. Everybody else is a representative of a dead corporation. Literally, they are dead. They're the walking dead. So you're the only living being. That's why one of the things that Stephen has taught me is that when you're dealing with the courts, you do it in handwritten. Why handwritten? Why not typed? Because only a living being can write on a piece of paper with a pen. A corporation does it with a computer. Okay? I'm a living being. I write my documents out. I'm the only person that can write that document out. So you're telling the court, I'm a living being. I'm not using your system. I'm using common law system. So I'm in the middle of this right now, and hopefully by the end of the month it will come to a head. But who knows? When you're dealing with a corrupt system, you can play all your cards right and still lose the game. So it's a risk. Those of us that are coming up against this system and saying hell no are risking everything. And we're doing it. Many of us are doing it for everybody. I'm just tired of the bully, and the court system is the bully in my eyes. I've come up against them many, many times. Like I say, I drive for a living. I've been into court probably most 20, 30 times more than most people will in a lifetime. I've driven over 3.5 million miles in over 30 years and accident-free miles. And, you know, I got people that don't even have never even seen the inside of the truck that are going to critique what I do. I hold it a minute. You know, I got over 30 years. If there was such a thing as a doctor's degree in trucking, I'd have like 3 or 4 or 5 of them. You know, I mean, who are you to sit there and critique? My record speaks for itself. I've been doing this for a long time, and I've never harmed anybody, you know? So, and that's hard to do these days. There's a lot of people out there on these roads with a lot of different agendas and a lot of different kind of equipment and a lot of different moods and a lot of different attention spans, and we're all mixing together out there on the roads. It ain't always going to go smooth, people. I mean, the truck I drive, I don't have to do anything to piss anybody off. My mere presence pisses people off. I don't have to do anything. I could be sitting on the shoulder of the road pissing people off in a truck, you know? So there's going to be conflicts, but we all just have to keep a level head. You know, if I went off and went to court every time somebody scared me or something on the road, I'd be in court every day. It happens to me 6 times a day. Somebody will do something around my truck in their car where I go, oh, shit. And I'm like white-fingered, wondering, okay, am I going to get through this? And whew, wow, that was close. It happens every single day, people. It is stressful out there. And I drive 120,000 to 140,000 miles a year. And it's getting tougher and tougher every day. People are on edge. And it's time for everybody to settle down. I know there's new energies flowing into the planet. It's stirring everything up, which in the long run is a good thing. There's light at the end of the tunnel here. I believe what's happening is mankind is expanding his consciousness, and pretty soon it's going to be more natural to be loving towards each other and working with each other, and these courts will just move off to the side because there's no need for them. Not because we'll go off and with guns and run them out the back door. Just, we won't need them. You don't need a judge in common law. It's that simple. You don't need a prosecuting attorney. You need two people that have an argument and a group of people to sit and listen to the argument and see if they all can work it out. That's common law. And that's what we need.
Well, we no longer have a government as it was defined as by the people, of the people, for the people. As we pointed out tonight, all of these, and this is global, this is not just the United States, all the courts, all the governments, all the functions of military and all other aspects of public realm have been incorporated. That's why we're seeing right now the Trans-Pacific Partnership coming into play, which is greatly going to enhance the scope of that. But when we talk about corporations, most people do not stop to include what they consider to be, quote, their own government in that. And this is a problem because they haven't looked behind the curtain. You were talking earlier about the court system and the monetary system. Well, you know, again, I can't speak to those in Europe and even in Canada on this, but here in the United States, we have what's basically a private prison system, which is a huge profit machine for private mm-hmm. business people, both from the standpoint that they're being paid by the government to house prisoners, as well as using the prisoners for, you could only call it slave labor, what these people are being paid to do, work inside of prisons to produce goods that are then sold. Large corporations like Microsoft was using prison industries to shrink wrap software. Microsoft, one of the three largest corporations on the planet, using effectively American slave labor inside prisons to shrink wrap mm-hmm. their software for profit.
Yeah, nothing surprises me anymore, Andy.
The court systems themselves have their own back-end banks, by the way. They are securitizing and monetizing everything, including all signatures. Stephen, can you talk to that a little bit about the monetization of signatures, the creating of bonds and financial instruments? What you might know yeah. about that?
Well, they started monetizing the people. They that's when they introduced the birth certificate. They introduced it as something great for mothers, so the children would always have government benefits if needed, you know. So that's how that was sold to the public. It was a big compilation of acts, the Bankruptcy Act, the Federal Reserve Act, etc., the Emergency Banking Act, the Mandatory Act.
House Joint Resolution 192.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a big bunch of soup, okay, basically what it is. The end game was where they monetized on every child born, okay, and unless the parents took the birth certificate and rescinded it and had a hearing, you know, to rescind that birth certificate so the government doesn't legally own the child. As far as corporate channel, so they're selling that kid on the open market. Okay, they had prorated it at the time when it came out. I think it was $300,000 they could make in their whole life, and now they're prorated it, you know, to $900,000 I think nowadays. And they, but they can borrow on that as a derivative, so you know. Somehow, legally, they find a way to do this, what, 9-1 or something? See that?
Oh, the margins aren't even real anymore. None of this is real. That's the interesting part about it is that in a debt economy, the only thing of value is debt. So the more debt you have, the more economy you have. But there's an inverse curve to that because we're now at the end of this cycle in terms of how we can monetize debts, because we're no longer able to put them onto the capital markets globally, largely China being the largest purchaser of these bonds and these debts, these derivatives, everything from home mortgage loans to default swaps that have been contrived. You see, what happens in America, unfortunately, doesn't stay in America. It ain't frickin' Las Vegas here. We have pissed in the pool of the nations. We have contaminated the nations. And look, until the American people specifically own up to this, own up to the corruption that they allowed to happen on their watch, and then begin to clean it up. Dennis said something earlier that I thought was interesting. He said, we're not going to take this back by force. And as much as I'd like to think that our military is behind us and that we could somehow use that as an enforcement arm, hopefully not in a violent conflict, the real power here is going to be the will of the people. And it's a twofold thing. It does have to do, by the way, with the aspects of love coming in, the concept that consciousness is ascending, the concept that people are waking up. But it's a twofold thing. We have to stand up for ourselves. This goes back to my intro tonight, by the way, on the Savior programming, because we're still basically, as a people, traumatized and mind controlled to believe that we are not capable of steering our own ship. This is the mindset of socialist economies, fascist economies. It's all the same thing in the end. But we need to be able to stand on our own two feet and do what Dennis was talking about and what you're talking about, what I've done in courts as well, of basically going into court in your proper person as a living spirit and invoking your rights, which are God-given. They're not even guaranteed by a piece of paper, whether it's the Magna Carta or the Constitution. Those rights were given by Creator to us as co-creators, as co-gods. I look at it that way. Sorry if you're offended by that.
Amen, brother.
I'm sorry, but we are, in fact, gods in amnesia right now, and that's part of the whole wake-up process, is we need to take back our godhood. We need to understand that we are fractals of the divine spirit, and no man has the right to trample that. In fact, that's blasphemy in my book. Anybody want to pick that ball up and run with it?
Exactly. Exactly. As a person goes within and finds their higher self or their true self, or some call it Holy Spirit, call whatever you want. I don't care about the terminology. I care about the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter is humanity needs to wake up and have love for each other. And I believe that's what this energy is coming in. I'm not an astrologer or anything, but I know I've, in the last few years, connected with some very powerful women, empaths, mystics, women that are in tune with their bodies and with the earth, Gaia, and the energies, and they have taught me so much about the inner self. And that's where the truth is with each and every one of us. We don't need gurus. We don't need people that's got doctorate degrees and all this stuff. We need to connect with our higher self and connect with the full facets of who we are. I had a phrase that came out one time when I was in a kind of a situation with some government officials all around me and stuff, and it just came blurting out when somebody asked me, well, so who are you? They were asking me for my ID, and I wouldn't give it to them. And I says, I'm a sovereign, interdimensional, energetic, eternal being. Who are you? And it just, it was so funny how this guy responded. It was like he was a trained, or like a computer, and he didn't know how to respond to that.
He was a
answer.
Robot. He was a zombie robot.
Yeah. So when you connect with yourself, something happens. You start interacting with people, and you start responding to them in ways they've never heard before. They don't know how to respond to this. So this is what I've found over years and years. This one way I deal with these government officials, because I deal with them all the time, I'll give them one of these lines, or I'll give them something that makes them think. It gets them off their game. It gets them off their pattern. It gets them into the instinct realm and out of the programming realm, because I bust their program. You know, it's like I get pulled in to get inspected, and the first thing I do is just start laughing with them and having a good time. How you doing, brother? And I just like, you know, boy, I'm glad to see you. Boy, you know, that sticker's awful old on my windshield. It's been a long time. I thought maybe I hadn't been taking a shower. Maybe you guys didn't like me anymore. You see, so I'm talking to him in ways he doesn't hear every day. So naturally, they're going to tend to go to their more natural responses to another human rather than to their programming. So it's real simple, people. It's not like you got to be some brain surgeon. You just got to talk to people as people. Talk to that government official that's trying to run you over the coals like you talk to your aunt or your grandma, and see what happens. It's amazing. Sometimes, once in a while, it blows up in your face. I've had it happen, you know. Handcuffs go on, and you go off to a little room over in the corner, all right? But most of the time, it softens the thing. It softens the situation. It gets them out of their game. And if I can get them out of their game and into the real world of two human beings interacting, I'm leaps and bounds ahead right off the bat, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Steve?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I didn't want you falling asleep on me here.
No, I was agreeing with what Dennis said.
It's not the guest, good if the guest nods out on you. You know you've lost it then. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's take a break here.
Okay.
We'll run the, might as well run 2 hours since it looks like we got enough steam to keep going here. So let's take about a 6 minute break. I'm sure Biggie has something queued up in the loop factory there to run a few messages. And we'll come back on the other side with Off Planet TV. My guests, Dennis Simmons and Stephen John Miller, we're going to talk about, Flat Earth when we come back. We'll see you.
One day, baby, we'll be old. Oh, baby, we'll be old. Think about the stories that we could have told.
And welcome back to the second half of Off Planet TV on 11-11-15. It is Veterans Day here in the United States. Thanks and prayers to all of you who have served, and our prayers for peace in a time when there will no longer be veterans in this world. And pretty interesting conversation. The last hour, we touched a lot on law and on the affairs of today, because it's all interconnected. Law and morality and the cultural collisions that are going on are all part of this energetic that is going on in the planet. And you know, I haven't really touched on it a whole lot, but I do want to mention that for those of you who are spiritually sensitive, you really want to stay open to the energetics of the universe right now, because there are remarkable things going on. I just spent almost 5 days in the mountains, a place called the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. We had a chance to unplug, pretty much no phone, literally no internet, and, you know, other than watching movies, no media. And what happens when you unplug from the grid for a while is you become sensitive again, especially when you're in a natural environment. And it gives you some time to dream. If you do something like meditation or remote viewing, it gives you time to operate in those zones. And it's real important now that the spiritually awake on this planet operate at higher and higher levels of spiritual operation, because we're coming into a time when there is a gathering that is going to begin to occur. I'm already seeing signs of this already. People who I'm meeting who are very, very attuned, there are groups forming, and it is not being done by humans, and it's not being done by the cabal. It's being done by universe itself and the earth itself, which is guiding us into these planetary grids and into the higher consciousness streams. So pay attention to what's going on inside as well as outside. And I'm joined tonight by my two guests, Stephen John Miller. He is a jurist and practitioner of common law, and Dennis Simmons, who is a very long-time friend of mine. Actually, we've known each other for many years, going back to when I was doing the threshing floor. So Dennis has traveled with me down this road that has gone in so many interesting directions, and welcome back to the second hour, guys.
Thank you, Randy.
Stephen, we're going to talk this hour about Flat Earth, and when you know, this term Flat Earth is so unfortunate in one respect, because really, you think about taking something that's a flat plane. Well, just for instance, you take a sheet of paper, which is a flat plane, and you crumple it up into a ball. You've just changed the dimensions of this thing trigonometrically in so many ways. So we've changed something. We've changed the perspective. Now, if I take the flat piece of paper again, that's a different consciousness than the ball, the crumpled up piece of paper that is now dimensionally intertwined. So in the course of investigating flat Earth for me, it didn't become a question of, well, is the Earth flat or is the Earth round? It became a question of how does my consciousness interrelate to all of this? And the way it came up for me was I was vaguely aware that this was like a meme virus on the internet, the flat Earth thing, and I ignored it. In one respect, I was kind of traditional in my thinking that I went, that's just laughable. But one of my contactees called me, and this is a person that's been, let's say, abducted many times, gone through a lot of mass trauma, part of MK Ultra programs and also cloning programs. And she began to tell me about what she saw coming into the planet and the fact that the planet itself was not a spheroid. And this got my attention. I heard the story from several other people as well who basically said the same thing. And as I began to look at the different videos on the internet, I was intrigued. I bought a couple of books. I looked at the work largely of Eric Dubay and also Matt from the NASA channel, eventually got to be too much of a stand-up comedian for his own good. Eric Dubay, who invited to be on this show, turned out to be a complete asshole. And I'll say that publicly. Eric, you're an asshole, and you've proved yourself that on Art Bell show a couple weeks ago. So Dubay turned me down, then went on a show that had about one-third of the ratings of this show. And it was not that it was a bad show or anything. It's just that, well, we've been around a long time, so we have a little bit of spin on the ball. No pun intended. And so the whole thing is a conundrum. How to find people. I know Mark Sargent's out there, and he's been on this network, and he's been interviewed in many different places. I just wasn't interested in reprising Mark Sargent's information either. So what we're going to do now is we're going to open the package and we're going to examine this from the perspective of three guys just sitting around having a conversation tonight. So go ahead, Stephen, unpack this.
Okay. First, we'll start with all the ancient scriptures, texts, Judaism, etc., Kabbalah, Torah, Talmud, and of course the Bible, etc., the Quran, the Gita, that's the Hindu Bible. They all agree on one thing, that the Earth is a flat plane, and it has a dome over it. They all agree on that, and about 500 years ago, Copernicus, a 33rd degree Mason, high-ranking Illuminati guy, got government funding to push this theory that the Earth was round-shaped, and they went for it. And then when you look at the lines of the ball-shaped Earth, it's all 33rd degree Mason signs, all of it. It's really bizarre, huh? When you look at it like that. So is that one of the great deceptions? They shall be handed a great deception. Well, can't think of a greater deception than that. to convince everybody in this existence that they live on a ball, and where they'll fight to the death to defend that idea, but none of them have any evidence to it. So I studied this because it really disturbed me that this could even be remotely possible. These are pretty smart people, and U.S. Navy missile instructor, U.S. Navy. This guy's a commander of five different submarine classes. People like this is who I've been listening to. Flight instructor, etc. There's a whole bunch now, which is really bizarre. And I checked these people out and vetted them, and they're real. And if they're telling me the Earth shows no sign of a curvature or the Coriolis effect, and I believe them. One Navy guy, the missile instructor, Sparrow missile instructor, seen Chicago 60 miles offshore. Okay, so if it was really, it was a mile squared onto itself, so the first mile drops 8 inches, the second mile is 2 plus 2 times 8, 2 times 2, times 8. So what's that? That's 32 inches, second mile. So the third mile, 76 inches. Fourth mile, 100 and whatever, 52. So you can see it gets quite a huge curve pretty quick, only after a few miles. After 60 miles, Chicago should be, you know, a quarter mile under the horizon. So that's based on their own math and trigonometry and, inverse squared or whatever. So, I mean, are using their own math. And now, but see, they never thought we would have cameras, though, Randy, that could zoom in as far as we can now. You know, 2 or 3 miles, if you could zoom in as of recently, would have been doing real good. And now we got cameras that'll zoom out, you know, literally, you know.
Well, not only that, now we have drones. We have the ability to put cameras up with drones and balloons, radio-controlled devices. Plus, here's the simple answer. If you live near a place like I do, where I can go up onto the top of a very high mountain and look down over a river valley, there's your tower right there. I have a river valley here. I can look down, I would say, about 13 miles straight, plus the bend in the river, which, by the way, terminates near Three Mile Island. Isn't that nice? But, all it takes is a vista from the top of that mountain, looking down into the Susquehanna Valley here in Pennsylvania, to realize that there's no curvature there.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of other places, Randy, like the Salt Flats. A lot of places now are getting attention now. This is coming out, where people are going, wait a minute, where could I test this? You know, not everybody wants to test it, and they did that laser test a couple weeks ago in San Francisco, across the bay there, and it should have dropped several feet at 4 or 5 miles, whatever it was, and it didn't. It was exactly straight, and they did a lot of testing to make sure it was accurate, I don't know, pretty fascinating though. And and then when you study the story of the Antarctic, as they so aptly call it, it's not really the South Pole. That would be the outer edges of this, what we call Earth. So if you get to that outer edge, you run into the ice and the cold weather, and it starts at about 200 feet high, and it goes up to 2 miles high, and then 200 miles, supposedly, to whatever it ends at, which some people say it's like a glass dome. And, why not? I mean, everything else I've ever been told, it turned out to be a fallacy. Well, maybe this makes more sense than anything, So, and then they passed all these laws, the Antarctic Treaty in, 57, where nobody could go down there. And if you get with the oil companies, can't even get within 200 miles of it, the biggest money in the world. But, what's going on down there where, there's 18 world class militaries down there that's all they do is keep people off of it. A lot of people don't know that. Why? What are they trying to keep people out of there for? So that's pretty bizarre behavior. And this is right after Admiral Byrd, was bragging about the Antarctic and all the mountains of coal and natural resources. And, it would be, advantageous for all the countries to, work down there. And, and then all of a sudden they disappear off the ice and start passing laws where nobody can go back. So there's a lot more going on. And then they started shooting nukes, supposedly, up into the atmosphere, right? This is in 57 as well. I mean, tons of them. Well, were they trying to bust out of the firmament? When they realized they couldn't bust a hole through it, they started designing, like Fermilab. When I was a kid, it was Fermilab in Chicago. And that's, that's a particle accelerator, just like CERN, but a lot smaller. And so they've been trying to open up this time-space continuum or something where they can escape this reality. I'm convinced of it, because they just kept firing missiles up to sell the American people we have a space program. And, when I looked into these satellites, I can't find any photos of them except for composites or something looks like a model I could build out in the garage. And I can't find any real pictures of anything. And I never thought about that until it was pointed out to me. I can't remember the guy's name on YouTube now. But it's just amazing.
It was probably Matt Boylan, who claims anyway that he was a realistic graphic artist for NASA, that he was basically responsible for creating the graphics that NASA puts out. And Boylan pointed out, and correctly so, you know, for trillions of dollars we've spent on the space program since the late 1950s, certainly going into the period of the Apollo missions, we don't have a hell of a lot to show for it in terms of representation of the planet. Now, this was the thing that got me. I'm not a science guy. So, you know, it's painful for me to go through and do the physics and the mathematics and all of the equations that need to be done. Although, really, it's not that difficult of math. Anybody with, you know, well, what used to be a high school education should be able to do this. It's algebra. But essentially, the real tell on all of this for me was the question of heliocentric versus geocentric, which was the great controversy going back to the time of Tycho Brahe, Copernicus, and Galileo. This war between heliocentric and geocentric, meaning how does the sun move? How do we move? Is it conceivable that the sun is, what, 93 million miles away? That the Earth is moving at thousands of miles per hour as we're spinning? We have all this movement going on. We have the moon going around us, which supposedly is responsible for the tides. There's the biggie for me. Because for as long... And here's the thing. The flat Earth question is important because of consciousness, because there are anomalies in all of this. How in the hell does gravity from the moon cause these waves in the ocean, but you can walk from the ocean inland to a sitting body of water and it has no effect at all upon it?
Right.
You see, there's problems on the table here. And in my situation right now, the proof really does lie with the Ballworth people in one respect. Because I want to know why we don't have videos of the Earth and the Sun and the orbits of these things, given that we've had the International Space Station, so-called, out there for over a decade, and the fact that we've had people in space since the mid-1960s, actually, manned spaceflight, the Mercury programs. Where is the hard proof on this? Why does NASA give us these glossy, painted pictures of everything and never show us actual raw footage of anything? It's either that they don't want to or they can't. Now, that's where I begin to get engaged with the concept that the Earth is not what it's been represented to be. Is it a ball? Is it flat? Is it a spheroid? Is it, well... Go look at the logo for this TV program, the representation of the Earth there, because that's as close physically as I can figure out it might look like.
Right.
You know,
Randy, just a layman, I'm like you, I'm no scientist. The math that Stephen comes up with and stuff, he talks over my head so far, you know, that I, you know, but to me, it's real simple. Who told us it was round? It's the same people that have been spraying us with chemtrails and electromagnetic waves and making us slaves and all of that. So it puts a big question mark in my mind. I don't know if it's flat, round, like a donut, sideways, whatever, but I can pretty much confidently say this. The story we've been given is bullshit.
Yeah. Well, again, the problem is that we don't have the ability to gather this evidence for ourselves. There is no private space flight. There will not be private space flight. NASA has sabotaged every one of SpaceX missiles they have basically put all kinds of obstacles in the way of Virgin, which wanted to put up passenger flights. It basically, anything above the 8 mile, 9 mile aircraft limit is off limits to us right now. So we're reliant on a government agency that we know has been running a secret paramilitary operation since its inception. It was founded by Nazis. I mean, Wernher von Braun was the designer of rockets for the Nazis. Wernher von Braun was brought in under paperclip to man NASA. NASA was designed to run as a front-end operation for a black project op on the backside, and now we have all these disclosures on the internet that are coming out and talking about the secret space program that's probably been running since maybe the 30s, the 40s, certainly the 50s. So you got to ask yourself, are we mushrooms here? What, you just keep us in the dark and feed us shit? Well, that's what it looks like to me when it comes to NASA.
Yep.
And see, the inquiry, the fact that people, because every once in a while I do a test balloon, I put something up on Facebook, and then I watch, because it inevitably garners, you know, a fair amount of responses. And the responses are weighted heavily towards people that are going, why are you even bringing this up? What does this matter? Why do we even care? And I'm going, dude, it's your planet. You might want to know what it looks like, and you might want to also understand that the planet is you. You're the planet. You are human, humus. You were formed from the earth, you know, breathed in the nostrils, the whole... You're part of this planet. We're energetically connected to the planet. I think it's kind of important what the planet is and how it's explained to us and the operations and functions of all these galactic movements that we're allegedly engaged with. Yeah, I think that's pretty important, actually. So don't tell me that I can't do an inquiry on this, and then you're going to mock me and call me a fool and tell me that I'm wasting my time. Whether it's flat, whether it's round, whether it's an orb, whether it's, something far more interesting, I think. I think this is a worthwhile conversation to have, because I think it engages our consciousness into something we've been trained not to think about.
Exactly. And I really believe that the human consciousness is going through an evolution right now. And in fact, not just an evolution, a unprecedented.
Yeah.
The things that are coming out and the things that the human consciousness is being exposed to, in my travels, remote viewing and meditation and dreams and visions, this is unprecedented. This has never happened in all of eternity before. So to me, the things that are going on when it comes to this slave planet that we're in, and how the corporations have taken over and fooled us on every level, but yet with all of their power, all of their control, all of their technology, all of their chemicals, with the TV and music and everything that people are distracted by, some of us saw through it all, and we can see that it's all a pile of garbage. Or like I told Stephen a while back, they've had thousands of years to weave this tapestry of bullshit, and some of us are starting to pull on the strings.
Yep, very well put. Yep.
Well, Stephen, give us
Randy.
Yeah, go
Randy,
ahead, Dennis.
Pull away, buddy. Pull away. Start yanking on them strings, buddy.
Yep.
No,
that's what you're doing, Randy. You're bringing these issues up. There's strings in this tapestry. Some of them might be true. Some of them might not be true.
I think
if it's the truth, it will stick. If it's not, you can pull it out, and then the tapestry gets weaker, and people will see the light and understand what the truth actually is.
I don't have a dog in this hunt, and I don't think any of us do here. And I think Stephen and I have talked about this subject several times, at least, pretty long conversations going over some of the things that were, again, this is not a panel discussion. This is not a scientific inquisition. This is just three guys sitting around talking about a subject that, you know, is interesting and important. But in talking to Stephen, I'm having these same conversations in the background with other people, some of who really don't publicly want to voice what they believe. Some people are actually afraid to discuss this, and other people, you can see them, they cringe when they do it, kind of like I mocked you right now. It's kind of like, oh, do we really have to deal with this? Well, yeah, we really kind of do. And there's other people that are saying, well, this is a psyop. Well, if it's a psyop, the question is, why are they running it, and why are they running it now? And is it going to hurt you too much to inquire into something that disturbs the established consensus opinions about your planet that you live on? I mean, that's a simple mental exercise. I can tell you, when people begin to come to me and tell me this, my consciousness shifted in a way that I didn't expect. It was almost like taking a hit of acid for a few minutes. It was like, well, that's interesting. Now, what happens if it's true? And you begin to see that there could actually be a very interesting symmetry to the planet if it is not a ball. And in fact, when you begin to observe the anomalies as a result of this, it gets even more interesting. And I was looking for this. I wanted to pull this up. This was another anomaly that I found. See, it's different for everyone. What is proof to one person is not necessarily proof to another. But I found this while I was going through some YouTubes. And this is the other thing that's really excruciating for me. I have to watch YouTubes to get most of this information, because there's a few books that were written on the subject at the end of the 19th century. Going into the 20th century, the late 1800s, this was a big deal. There were a lot of people at that time that were doing some very intelligent arguments in favor of a flat earth theory. But what you begin to find out is that once flight came in, it got tamped down real quickly. Isn't it amazing how the government stepped in and they began to regulate flight, and it got used for military purposes, which is exactly how they regulated it. So we never really had the opportunity to expand civil aviation. I hate that term because I know what it means. Civil aviation beyond the limit of small craft, meaning probably no more than 3 miles up in the air for private aircraft for the most part. So unless you had a private jet, you don't really have access to higher altitudes, even from the standpoint of traditional aircraft. But on the other side of it, there are no, quote, private people who own rockets. And there are no people who have gone into space that were not sanctioned by NASA. NASA is the world space agency. It is not just the United States. So we've kind of been effectively grounded. And then, as Stephen pointed out earlier about the bird expeditions, after 1958, all these countries signed on and agreed that Antarctica would not be developed, it would not be explored, it would not be traveled to. It was basically off limits, and you're going, what the hell was that? And, oh, by the way, why was that second expedition by bird called Operation High Jump? What's up with that? And it's kind of like you go, wait a minute. They name these things very cryptically. Well, you know, a 300-foot ice wall, just as a, well, just to trot out the standard consensus on what they believe about Antarctica, because clearly we're not falling off the edge of the Earth. I believe the creator of this planet, however intelligently designed this planet was, made certain concessions to the fact that man was going to free range on the planet, and basically I don't think we're dumping off into space or something. So if the planet is a flat plane, it is some kind of containment there that is not wreaking havoc with the laws of the universe in terms of humans dropping off of the edge. Although, you know, who knows, maybe hell's on the other side. Read the Book of Enoch. Very interesting descriptions in the Book of Enoch about this region, this nether region where the fallen angels were sent. So then you kind of go, wow, that sounds a little bit like hell. Maybe, who knows? I went way off. Way off the subject there.
No, I mean, you got a good point. Because I mean, I've always thought this existence would be considered like hell in a lot of ways.
It is, isn't it?
Hey, Stephen, you remember here just a week or so ago, this came up between our good friend Alma and us on a discussion, and she had a theory that I didn't understand, but you seemed to have grasped what she was talking about when she put up some stuff that was kind of like a donut shaped, and you said, you guys kind of went back and forth a little bit, and some people might have thought you were arguing, but really you weren't. You were just using different words. Did you get that concept? And did you find something there that kind of was? It's not so much flat like as in a record, an LP record, but had there was something about a donut shape or something. Did you understand that?
Well, where we actually live, where the oceans are and everything, that's actually flat. The exception of mountains and stuff, but then when you get to the edge, that's where you run into all the ice, and that does go up for miles. And then where does it go on the other side of that? Well, they've never let us know, but it could very easily be donut shaped, right there. Who knows? I mean,
So that was the theory she was coming up with. It's like a donut,
a toroidal field
in the inner ring of the donut.
So it's like a toroidal field.
Yeah, and because what Alma told me later was that she said it's like taking a two-dimensional, and the donut theory is like taking it three-dimensional. Because you can look at something in the 2D, and it looks one way, and then when you put it into the 3D, all of a sudden totally changes. And so I think if people can understand that when we're talking flat, it's not like an LP record. That's 2D.
Right.
It's a three-dimensional, and so it's just not a ball, but it's got curvature to it. But and I guess the closest thing is the donut. I didn't understand it. But.
You guys can't see this, but I just threw the graphic up that is a representation of the flat Earth. It's part of what I use for the graphic for the TV show. But if you look at this, you're going to see that this is not flat per se. It is it's a disc, but under the disc. Yeah. Is something very interesting in that structure, and I don't have a credit for the person who created this graphic, but it is visionary, because what I saw in terms of envisioning this in doing a remote viewing session with it is that the oceans themselves are innately connected to a subterranean system, both inside the Earth and underneath it, that creates some very unique energies themselves. It has nothing to do with the moon. And that shape that you see there on the screen right now, viewers, is kind of a good representation to work with. See if it works for you. But see, it's visualizing this and getting a sense for the concept behind it rather than all the mathematics and the science. Here's the problem with the science, for me anyway. All of the science is predicated on very large abstract numbers, numbers that you and I do not normally deal with. 93 million miles is a hell of a long way. Dennis, you haven't driven that far in your truck yet. You're going to be driving for a while. Light years, infinitesimal amounts of space all make this very unmanageable. But when you are able to consciously wrap your mind around something that may be more attainable to man, and that's what we're talking about here, considering what if the entire solar system, the stars, the moons, the orbs that they call planets, are inside of this domed area and not millions of miles away, or billions of light years, or billions and billions upon billions, as Mr. Sagan used to say, but in fact maybe within the range of thousands of miles and much smaller than they're portrayed to us, then you've got a system that's now manageable to the human consciousness, the human mind's ability to compute these things. So when we consider all of this, we're looking at how to conceptualize things from a human standpoint, which science does not do. Science takes everything and they stack more numbers and more formulas and more mathematics and more physics till we get to the place where, unless you have about 12 years of major physics or science, you can't understand the concepts. I don't think the universe operates like that. But then maybe that's just me.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Nothing works the way we think it does. That's what I've come to believe.
Well, that's exactly what I've said, too. Whatever this thing is, I don't think it's what they've told us it is, and I want to know what it is.
Now, Randy, in your remote viewing, is this representation you have here on Off Planet TV, is that about as close as you've come to what you've seen?
It's a physical representation of something I saw, because what I saw was not that concrete. And I'm not that great at remote viewing. I mean, I work at it. This was something that I consciously sat down and began to work with over a period of time. But what I ultimately envisioned was, in fact, pretty much almost like a disc surface, but at least a disc view of it. In remote viewing, you're targeting. So do you target the entire planet? Well, if you don't know how big the planet is, that's a little difficult to do. So the visualization that I got is somewhat close to that. What is interesting to me is that that's almost a toroidal shape there. It's a vortex. And that's what's interesting to me, was I was seeing energy flows that operated not just on the surface, but inside, and specifically energetics coming from the underside of the planet itself. How accurate is that? It's accurate for me. It gave me a visualization. It gave the artist who did this picture a visualization. Is that what it is? I would say no. I would say it's a graphical mean to get to an understanding that's a little bit deeper than just the physical shape of the planet itself.
Very good.
I hope that didn't sound ambiguous, because I didn't intend it to be.
Well, yeah, I still say this is a some kind of a computer graphic hologram or something.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, on one level, it is. It's a matrix, and in fact, you know, all of the world religions tell you that. I mean, Hinduism called it Maya, illusion. Even, you know, the holy scriptures, whatever you consider them to be, tell you that this isn't the real deal. There's something beyond this. Almost anybody that's spiritually, even at an intermediate level, knows that there's a fair amount of illusion to the entire existence that we lead here physically. But that doesn't denigrate the physical existence either. It's important. We're here for a reason.
Right.
And we're here to explore. And this is a world, and we are physically attached to this planet. And it goes back to even what we were talking about in the first hour with the law stuff. You know, damn it, it's my planet. I have a right to know this. You do not have the right to suppress it. You don't have the right to lie, obfuscate, and present false data in order to detach us from something that is basically our essence, our primordial being, which is the planet that we inhabit.
Right. We're a part of it. You know, living beings that drink water and eat food and die. We're born here and we die here. So it's imperative we figure out what the hell is going on before the crazy people running the joint burn it to the ground.
We're not going to let them do that. We're not going to let them do that. But it's good to ask questions, and it's good not to suppress the questions, and it's good to entertain things sometimes. Even, look, we're guys that enjoy doing this kind of stuff. Dennis, you and I've had amazing conversations. Stephen, you and I have had incredibly long discussions about all manner of things over the time that we've known each other. And I think these are important, and I don't think anybody should denigrate an examination such as, you know, is it a flat earth, or we're only given choice. You know, I put this thing up a few weeks ago about the Matrix. Basically, what it says, I'll just nutshell it. It says Neo, the red pill and the blue pill are both still in the Matrix. You've only been offered two choices: vote Republican, vote Democrat. Communist, capitalists. Yeah. You're always given two choices, and I'm going, damn it, there's at least one more, and there's probably a whole infinitude of other choices. So why am I limited to two choices on this? Is it a ball? Is it flat?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's neither, or maybe it's both.
Yeah, there's probably a pink pill and a gray pill and a green pill. Who knows?
Don't take the choice. I choose not to
decide. Better yet, how about no pill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
That's the other choice. Yep. Now you're not in the Matrix anymore. Now you've unplugged and you don't have to deal with Mr. Smith anymore.
Right.
Or do we just move up to the next level of Matrix? And is there multiple levels of matrixes?
Of course there is. But there is a place where you transcend Matrix too. And that's the important part. I mean, what we live in is what Dennis, you're familiar with Gerald O'Donnell's work, and Gerald O'Donnell calls this the dark matrix. But the matrix itself is the mother. Well, like Gaia? You mean like the creative natural force, the natural grid? See, the matrix is an overlay. The matrix is a container that separated us from original source, original essence, and basically put us into an artificial intelligence system. Oh, we didn't go into that tonight, but that plays into the flat earth thing as well. That plays into all of this because there is an AI running in the background. And that AI, in effect, is right now the master of the time domain. Not time, a time domain, much like in a computer, a CPU. And that clock can speed up or slow down. It can be interrupted. It can be distorted. And we're all operating in it because we're all these little bubbles bouncing around off of each other as individual consciousness, interacting with a unified consciousness, and also interacting with the AI. So, see, it's not just as simple as what shape is the planet, is it? It goes into a whole spectrum of other things that really, you know, they need to be considered and they need a context to consider them.
Yeah, well, the archons, that's what they like to do, is make everything artificial because they couldn't become like us. They're trying to turn us into them without a soul. And if they can, you know, talk enough people into selling their soul, I honestly believe the soul does leave the human body once it's decided to stop being used at all. The soul can actually depart, and you have this biological robot, empty shell. And I've actually met these people.
Mm-hmm.
They exist. They have no soul or spirit of life whatsoever.
Yes.
It's amazing. Yep.
Yeah, I think we all three agree on that because we've all talked about it before. The idea that there are basically beings that populate our reality that are not living souls. They are robotic, cybernetic AIs that basically are, I call them walk-ons. They're like the walk-ons on a movie set. They're part of the scenery in the background of the reality stream. But close inspection, you might call them psychopaths, you might call them these zombie androids, but basically from the level of the soul, they are functionally non-human.
Right.
And some of them may very well be ETs as well. Oh, we got to throw the ETs in too, because people go, how can you talk about that UFO stuff and the ETs? And it's kind of like, well, that's flipping crazy. And I'm going, well, you might want to look into this because I got a bunch of testimony from people, including military people, who seem to think that this is actually real. So, oh, now we can add flat earth to the ET thing that we're not ever supposed to talk about.
Right.
And well, I've known you, Randy, for a long time. And anytime somebody tells you you can't, that's exactly where you go. And that's one thing that's drawn us together over all these years, because we're just the kind of guys that when somebody says no, we go, really?
Yeah. We fought a lot of wars over the years. I mean, there was a time back when I had my forum and the threshing floor shown. I mean, that place, that was a shooting range. I mean, people, you know, Christians are really militant about stuff. They're like, they got a lot of rules. And I'm like, yeah, there's not that many rules. I can ask that question. I can say that. I can look at that. I can read the Book of Enoch and go, oh, wow, it's talking about, wow, this place on the planet where it's frozen and the fallen angels are exiled. Oh, and then you wind up where we are tonight talking about concepts that really disturb the collective consensus reality.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Take people out of their comfort zone. You know, I asked him, I was in Wyoming, Randy, last time I did a show with you. And I went up to there's an observatory. It only takes you up about, 40, 50 feet or whatever. Mm-hmm. But from this observatory in Wyoming, which I was in the southeast corner of Wyoming, just as you get into Dakota, South Dakota. Well, the people that work there at the park said you can see Yellowstone from there. But Yellowstone, that's almost 600 miles from here. How is that possible? 550, I think. They said, you can see three states from up there. So I got up there and it's like, sure as hell, you can see. Okay, well, if that's truly going by their math that NASA uses in Jet Propulsion Laboratory, all these people using this math, according to their math, those things, let's just go out 300 miles and do the math on 300 miles. 100 miles is, I can't remember now. But, it'd be miles below the horizon. There'd be no way you should be able to see any of that stuff. But, that was big evidence to me right there, there's no way you should be able to see that. Even if you could just barely see the mountain tips, that's all you should be able to see. They should be tipping away from you,
Well, there's a very standard measurement for all this, and people can look this up on the internet. It's published under a number of different titles, but it basically is the declination of the Earth on a curve, and it's consistent mathematics that unfortunately fails. We have people that can see Chicago from Minnesota. Well, that's not supposed to happen either. And then they get a weatherman on TV, and the weatherman's going, well, that was a mirage. Really? Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. In Minnesota, how's that work? Where's my camel? After a while, the level of deception, it's just like the chemtrails thing, Now, apparently, the U.S. Weather Service, the USGS, and NOAA, the North National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Organization, all adjuncts of the U.S. government incorporated, these guys are all being put under non-disclosures. They can't even talk about their professional work on atmospheric and weather conditions. The same censure that basically the Air Force and Navy Intelligence put all of the pilots under to tap down the UFO thing under Blue Book. So you still have the same censure that goes on all the time in terms of any kind of inquiry that would be free thinking and open to, perhaps expanding the knowledge base and consciousness of the great unwashed out here, that being us.
Yeah. They're sellouts. People will do anything for a paycheck and comfort, including lie. Like Michio Kaku, think about it. Michio Kaku, Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, all these physicists, every one of them were little cowardly Nancy boy sellouts. And they knew it. And they're on TV smiling through their million-dollar teeth, lying through their teeth. And they know it.
And by the way...
But I realized... Oh. Huh?
No, I was going to say, I just happened to look at the chat room, and Amma is actually on the chat room tonight. So she posted some things there that you might want to see as well. That'll be up on the on offplanetmedia.net on the chat board. But Amma posted some things about Admiral Byrd and the toroidal coil. And there's also a YouTube video posted there by Anon2178. Thanks for that. Thanks for the people in the chat room, by the way, tonight. And Stephen, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step over you. We got just a few minutes here, so we're kind of go around the table one more time and get any closing thoughts and anything at all that you want to be heard saying tonight.
If you want to get in touch with me, I can go into a lot more detail about law that may be of service to you. Just, you know, give out my email address, whatever you want.
Well, go ahead and give it now, and then go ahead and give your email address out.
Okay, Steven64, just like it sounds, Steven with a, you know, STEVEN 64 at hushmail.com. Just the way it sounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can tell you right now that Steven's work is superb. He's helped me out with some things in terms of getting documents drafted and kind of working through strategies, as he is also doing with Dennis's current situation and many others. So we'll put the email address up with the show in the show notes on the web pages when this goes up on YouTube and on the website. And Dennis, give us a final thing here.
I just want to say I love all of humankind. I've learned, so like I said earlier, I've learned so much from the Divine Feminine and connecting with some of these wonderful ladies, and Alma being right at the top of that list. That is one fantastic lady. Very, very smart, very sharp, and has helped me tremendously over the years. And I want to put a kudos out to Stephen, because he's a very simple man. He lives simply. He loves helping people with their legal problems. It's something, he just gets a sparkle in his eye when he gets to help somebody get out of these traps that have been set for people. But he does live a simple life, but he still does need funds. So if he does help you, you know, kick a little his way, you know, give him a little hand. You know, he doesn't charge people, but any donations would be greatly appreciated. So I just want to thank everybody for listening, and it's been a real pleasure to be on your show, Randy, and I want to thank you for all the work you do, and you've done it tirelessly for decades now, and I want to put out a big kudos to you and ask people to find it in their hearts to support your network, because you're a one-man show that does unbelievable work. So I love you, bro. Love you, Steven, and love everybody out there.
And I'll close it out. I'm Randy Moggins. This is Off Planet TV, Off Planet Radio. The website's offplanetradio.com. You may be watching this on the media site at offplanetmedia.net. And as always, we remind you the truth is out there. It's inside you. Keep looking for it and keep looking up. We'll be back with another show very soon. Good night.